Thanks, Michael. Thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure, and I can remember so many years ago just seeing your name always playing playing golf and always being successful. That sporting history really does run in the family. It runs deep. Your father, Gordon, a late bloomer to golf, close to a scratch golfer. Your husband, Charlie, a successful racehorse trainer. Brother-in-law, Bill Goggin, a champion VFL player. Your son, Matthew, a world-class golfer. And now your granddaughter, Hallie Mayburn, is an Australian-ranked junior. It's great history, isn't it?
It is great history. We've been pretty lucky, pretty successful.
I guess it's just a sheer love of the sport. I guess a love of just being competitive. Is that what it is, is it a little bit more than that?
Well, yeah, probably. I mean, we are a very very competitive family, or both the Goggin and the Jennings family, really. It kind of born with it, I suppose. And my father was an obsessed golfer from, late age. He didn't start till he was 40, and I was sort of 110. We actually lived on the old golf course which is now Tasmania, but it was Lindisfarne Golf Club. And we lived on the 15th hole, which sort of backed onto the course. And it was quite a unique golf course because it had a lot of canyons and, very, very unique little golf course, actually.
Yeah, it set you a bit of a challenge. Life began for you in the morning on the Mornington Peninsula near Rosebud. So when did the family move to Tassie?
No, not for me. I'm the only born Tasmanian. My father came here he was the engineer that actually built the airport at Launceston. And I was born in Launceston. Here's my dog barking.
That's all right.
And then we moved to Hobart, and we lived at the airport while he did the same thing there, while he built the new airport while he was the engineer in charge of building the airport in Hobart. And then he went out on his own in a construction business, which proved to be very successful as well.
Yeah, he was successful. Tell us about your dad, because we've all got a story to tell about our dads, haven't we?
Well, he was, as I said, an obsessed golfer. He just loved horse racing. He became a very successful businessman. He also became a very successful horse breeder, and hence why Charlie followed in the footsteps of horse training, which evolved at my father's place at Runnymede. We had a farm there, which we had horses there, and Charlie decided he would try his hand, and it became, a passion for him.
Yeah, and of course Charlie's just so successful, and that started off. Do you have a love of horses yourself, race horses?
I like going to the races and I like the winning of the races, but I don't have the passion for the horse part of it. My daughter does. My eldest daughter, Luella.
Yeah.
She is an absolute whiz with horses, and she does all our. She was doing all our. Preparing horses for sales. She breaks them in, and now her eldest daughter is doing the same thing. We only have a few horses now, but she was the horse side of the family, and Matthew and I were the golf side of the family.
And I guess a sad thing, a tragic accident took your father from you, and Matthew was overseas on the golf course, I think, on the putting green or doing some practice or something. It must have been a terrible time for everyone when that took place.
Well, it was. It was one of those freak accidents that happened in Hobart, but Matthew was actually teeing it up for his first pro tournament in Malaysia, and my father was just, as I said, an obsessed golfer, so much so that, he before mobile phones came, and I think he used to drive a lot of the secretary managers at the golf courses and the pros mad, knowing had to know what every score was on every hole that I ever played while he wasn't there, and he would have done the same thing with Matthew, I think, as well, but then it wasn't to be. But Matthew played that week. We made him stay and play, and he did okay, and then, but my father would have loved to have watched him play pro golf.
Yeah, that's for sure. For yourself, Lindy, what was the attraction with golf? You got that, I guess, from your father, but were you just instantly good at it, or did you have to work?
Well, sorry, I work. I wasn't an avid practicer, although my husband says, oh, don't be ridiculous, you used to be there every day. but I didn't ever have to put in hours and hours and hours of practice. But having said that, my father, being the avid golfer he was, he used to travel a lot to the pro tournaments with a group of blokes, you know, like they do. They go away and they watch. But he'd spend most of his time on the practice field, like getting to know the pros. Like, you know, in those days we had Jack Nicklaus over here and we had people like that that, you know, were on the practice fairways, and he sort of got to know them in a way, you know, but he was basically watching to bring back, you know, to coach me, because he was basically the only person that really ever coached me.
Yeah, okay.
And so, you know, we're obviously living on the golf course, and in the street where we lived, you know, the boys played. We used to go out in the golf course and play golf, if it was, you know, golf or cricket, but mostly golf, and there was quite a few state players came out of Sunhaven Avenue at Lindisfarne and backed onto the golf course there.
Yeah, what a brilliant place to be if you love golf, and that's sort of where it all began. Look, you soon became an outstanding player in the state. You were the best amateur player, at least in the country, and then I guess you could throw it in that you're probably the best amateur player in the world. What was the thing that drove you, Lindy, to great heights as a golfer?
Well, I think I was lucky that I say lucky. You know. I had a swing that didn't break down very often. I was successful at it, and, you know, I keep saying, you know, if you be successful at something, you win something, you want to win more, and you keep going. And we're at in a period where I reached my peak. Golf Australia, Women's Golf Australia, as it was called then, were very strong, and, you know, they had teams going away 4 and 5 times a year internationally, and of course that was something to look forward to. You know, we went around the world and played golf for Australia, and we had a terrific group of good players, which we were very successful winning the first World Cup for women, the Espirito Santo, in Fiji, and you know, I represented Australia basically from 1970 to about 1988. So, you know, I travelled the world. I didn't turn pro, obviously, for obvious reasons, but. You know, it was just a great time in my life, and you know, I had a lot of support from my parents, obviously. You know, because it's not cheap.
No, not much money around. So that was that full reliance on your parents, and maybe a bit of fundraising to keep everything going, or was it just mainly the money from your parents?
As I said, Golf Australia funded nearly all our interstate and, or, you know, Golf Tasmania, the interstate series, etc., funded that usually. The Women's Golf Australia funded all the international trips. There were times when I went to America on my own, and obviously we funded that ourselves.
Yeah, and you came third once at one particular state in the 1982 Canadian Women's Golf Championship. That must have been...
that was a team that was actually a Golf Australia team. Mm-hmm. I captained and took away half a dozen youngish players, which included Jane Crafter, who you've probably heard of. And
yes,
a few other players like that.
From South Australia.
And then from South Australia, now American commentator, etc.
Yes.
And... yeah, so that was that one, and then probably the major one was me coming runner-up in the U.S. Amateur Championship at Portland, Oregon, which they got a big shock there that day, because I don't think they realised that, you know, they thought Julie Ingston would just walk all over me, and it was just unfortunate. She actually birdied the last 2 holes to beat me.
It's quite amazing. And you captained Australia on many occasions. How did that come about, Lindy, that you would captain Australia?
Well, I guess I don't know how.
Someone made a call.
Pardon?
Someone made a call and said, "Lindy, I think you'd be good at it."
Yeah, no. Well, it was just you know, I think I sort of had the respect of the other players, and you know, I was invariably in the team anyway, and I had the respect of the golf union. You know, I just I was chosen.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I was very good at it, but anyway, we seem to have a bit of success along the way.
Well, my guess is that you probably were. Stick with us, Lindy. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with more of your story after the break. My very special guest on Where Are They Now is champion golfer Lindy Goggin. Welcome back to the Sideline View. Michael Maney with you. My very special guest is Lindy Goggin. She's a Hall of Fame golfer and an outstanding player in the game of golf. Lindy, you were inducted into the Tasmanian Golf Hall of Fame, and Matthew was there to share the moment with you. That must have been pretty special.
It was, yes. He came home unexpectedly for a short while, and always pleased to have him home for a while. We don't see him all that often.
So tell us what Matthew's up to. Where is he now? Because I'd love to have Matthew on the program too. He's outstanding. What's he up to these days?
Well, Matthew's not playing as such professional golf at the moment, only because he sort of had a couple of years of injury, and then, of course, he lost his card due to that, and it was very hard to get back. He may go to... And they changed all the there wasn't any qualifying schools for... obviously reasons last year. So the people that had their cars the year before kept them this year. So he'll probably have to go back and try again. Otherwise, he's probably waiting maybe for seniors golf. But his main project at the moment is he's involved, and it was his idea, his baby, basically, of building a golf course at 7 Mile Beach and the dunes at 7 Mile Beach. And it's an unbelievable piece of ground. And that has taken a lot of his time the last few years trying to get that through, you can imagine. It's all just starting, and he has Mike Clayton and Mike DeVeers, who was a Kate Wickham architect, on board, and it's just in the process of pegging out and at the moment. So that's his big project. He still lives in America, two children, and would love to come home, and probably will in the near future.
And what about Mum? Does Mum have a bit of a say in this golf course? Have you put your two bobs worth in?
No. God, they're way above my ability to have any in say in that.
Go ahead.
Go on.
No, go.
Okay. No, but I said it'll be very interesting to see when it's finished, because I think it's going to be a marvellous golf course.
Yeah, that and what a wonderful area down south, isn't it? It's just amazing. The beautiful scenery. It's just a wonderful place.
And the dunes are, you know, quite very sheltered. Like, it'll be more sheltered than probably Barn Boogle is. That'll be a plus.
Yeah.
And also just a great thing for Tassie, because to have another, you know, world-class golf course, it's going to be a real mecca for golf, you know, in years to come.
Designed by a world-class golfer, and because Greg Norman's done an awful lot too, hasn't he? And I guess brilliant. Lindy, on the local scene, you won the Tasmanian Amateur title 19 times from 67 to 91, but 1974's win was pretty extra special. Now, Matthew was born, and then 7 days later, you checked yourself out of hospital to play, and you won. That's staggering when you think about that physically for you. How did you manage that?
Well, I managed it, again, by having parents that were just so supportive of, and obviously Charlie was around too, but my mother was unbelievable with looking after the children, and she was actually the president of the golf union at the time. So she had to bring Matthew down in the basket while I was playing golf, because she was having meetings. It was quite bizarre, really. And it was just that I was so fit having Matthew. I basically played right up until, you know, probably 3 or 4 weeks before I went into hospital, and then I was basically walked out, you know, looking just as the same as when you know, before I was pregnant. So I was lucky in that respect that I was still fit enough, and I thought, oh, well, I might as well go and play.
And confident enough too, because you would have had to nominate, et cetera, all that sort of thing. So you're pretty confident that you'd be able to get there, but sticking the nomination in was one thing. Actually getting onto the course is the other, and you managed that.
That's right, yeah. It was down at Tasmania Golf Club, so it was a bit of a trek, but it was right, yeah.
And you touched on a little earlier, you said for obvious reasons you never turned pro, and I guess that is family in one sense, I suppose, and then not the money in the game back then that would be able to support you to be able to do that pro. Am I on the right track there, or is there something else to it?
Well, yes, it was, and it was also that I probably, you know, you went to, there was only one tour, and you went to America, and basically it wasn't the most pleasant place to be. I'd been over and played in the US Open and, you know, a couple of pro events there, but it wasn't, but that was later on even. it wasn't the place to be, and you felt like you never came back because the world, I mean, the world's so small now, you know, whereas then it just seemed so far away, and you couldn't come back every, it's like last week at the Tokyo Olympics, Hannah Green was in America, she came back for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Before the Tokyo Olympics, and then went over there. Well, you couldn't have done those sort of things in my day. And I wasn't actually money-driven either, you know. I know I could have made a lot of money. I probably could have. But then again, there was one instance when Matthew had a super tournament at the Masters at Huntingdale and shot a record score, but he actually came second. And, of course, they used to always ask him those questions, you know. It was always that relate back to me, you know, which used to drive him mad, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Drives Hallie mad a bit too, I think, to my granddaughter. And they said, you know, he said, well, why would I want her to turn professional? Because I wouldn't be sitting here if she did. So I'm quite happy she didn't, you know. So it was a different time.
Yeah, a different time back then. And you make decisions when, you know, when you need to. And I guess that was a call that you made. You mentioned Hallie. She's your granddaughter, Hallie Mayburn. Yeah. And earlier in the year, you took out, I think, a foursomes tournament at Royal Hobart with Hallie. That must have been special to be able to play with your granddaughter and get success.
Yes, it was. It was very special. And so I did that. And then I won the state mixed foursomes with Matthew when he was an amateur. And, she's a very, very talented player.
Yeah, she's got talent. Now, I've heard that she's a terrific striker of the ball, but she can also play Aussie rules footy as well, and that's quite amazing. But I think golf might be the thing that she's into more.
Well, she is, but unfortunately this year she's been injured quite a bit from football and golf. She's actually played a tournament in Adelaide in March in one of the big ladies' events over there and broke a finger in the... in the door at the clubhouse at Royal Adelaide in the second round, and then and broke a finger again playing football about 4 weeks ago. So she basically hasn't played a lot of golf the last, and did her ankle in the middle of playing football. So football's been good in some respects, but not so good in others for a golf. But hopefully that come September when all the finals are finished, that'll be the end of the football for a while.
Now, did she set a course record for her age, I guess, at Cooyonga earlier in the year?
Not for her age. She set the course record for any amateur, Australian amateur, in any amateur. Even at the Australian Open, there wasn't a better score than hers for an amateur or player.
So when you look at her swing, can you see anything that resembles your swing, or has she just got her own game and she just hits the ball so nicely?
No, nothing related to my swing, because the golf swings have changed. You know, I've sort of got the old-fashioned swing. She's got the more present time, the more relevant sort of to today. She's so strong. She's so long with her driver. She's, in fact, Mike Clayton caddied for her at the Master of the Amateurs early on in the year, and I think he got a shock. He said, I've never seen a woman, because she did drive the ball exceptionally well there. I've never seen a woman drive the ball as well as what she has, and he's been a pro around the world and caddy for a lot of women pros, Sue O and people like that. He said, I couldn't believe it, yeah.
So,
you know, she's got a lot of talent, but she's still got a long way to go.
So if anyone out there is listening, Hallie Mayburn is her name. Keep an ear out for her. She's got a little bit of something special. You played a lot of rounds of golf, Lindy, and I guess you've found yourself in some very tricky spots on the course here, there and everywhere. But can you tell us a round of golf that has stood out for you over the years? Is there one particular, or maybe a tournament that where you thought, I'm gone here, I can't do anything, but you've been able to come back?
Goodness, I haven't got a very good memory for old time scores, et cetera, to be quite honest. I remember, shooting a course record at my home club at Royal Hobart, and I had 8 on the first, you know, and then I had 10 birdies after that. So, you know, there's sort of scores like that around. But, oh, gee, to remember coming back from... I mean, there was a tournament in Victoria where I won a 72-hole event, and the third round I shot a very bad score because my father had taken himself off to the doctor and I thought there was something wrong. And he came... Anyway, I eventually came back to the golf course, and in the afternoon I shot a course record, so... You know, there was times like that, but, you know, to be quite honest, I can't remember a lot of them.
Well, I reckon this next question you'd probably maybe be able to recall a little bit more. The very best golf course that you've ever had the privilege to play on, is there one that stands out, or one or two?
Well, I was lucky enough to, I still one of my favourites is Kingston Heath and Royal Melbourne. And I am a member at Kingston Heath. In fact, I'm an honorary member at Kingston Heath and have been since for a long time. I used to actually go and play pennant, fly over and play pennant there on Friday morning.
Wow.
They'd pick me up, I'd play pennant and I'd go home. And then later on, as far as the best golf courses I've played, it's hard to say.
Nothing overseas that comes to mind?
Beg your pardon?
Nothing overseas that comes to mind Zealand and...
Yeah. Quite often we played when the tournaments were on. You played the course that was there, and quite often it wasn't the best. Might not have been the best course in the world. I mean, there was a course in Spain I played, which was great. We played the world tournament there, the first one I ever played, the Club de Campo. That was fantastic golf course. That was in Madrid. In England, we played the Berkshire, which is fantastic, but as far as picking out one, Gleneagles was great. I haven't played St Andrews, haven't played a lot of links courses, but been to a lot of them because Matthew played a lot of them. But it's interesting. I can't really pinpoint anything because I tend to like the Australian ones the best.
No, that's fair enough. And of course, life is in Hobart for you. You mentioned that you're still down there and have a little bit to do with the horses, I guess, and still obviously playing golf. You're playing in local pennant. So what are you doing?
Well, I don't really play pennant, no, because we don't really have a proper A-grade pennant down here in Hobart. I do play. I've been playing actually a bit lately. I didn't play for a long time because I basically stood back and because Charlie followed me around the world for so long, and then he took up horse training, and we had stables in Geelong, we had stables in Queensland on the Gold Coast, we had stables at a couple of lots of stables here, and had 100 horses in work, 60, 70 horses in work. So I basically didn't play golf for, I reckon 10 or 15 years, but I do play every week now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, I play off a ridiculous handicap of 2, which I can't really play to, but somehow or other I seem to manage to get to it, and I really would like to go out if I could.
I think at one stage you were the most handicapped golfer in Australia, weren't you?
I was the lowest in the world, actually, at one point, because I was on +4. Of course, that sounds ridiculous now, because some of these girls now, they're on, +8 and... six and eight, and boys are on +8. It's all different,
Yeah. All right. Well, an Order of Australia medal in 1980, 1993 Sporting Hall of Fame inductee. Outstanding career. It's been lovely to chat to you, Lindy. A wonderful golfer, and a real privilege to have you on the Sideline View. Thanks for joining me.
Not a problem. Thank you very much, Mike.